Praise Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Hello, friends. So if we haven't met, my name is Josh Swanson. I'm the lead pastor at Christ Church Sierra Madre, and I want to welcome you to our inaugural episode in our Through the Bible Through the Year podcast. And I wanted to begin just by talking about what we're trying to do here. And I want to begin like this. So this week, my daughter Audrey said to me something that was among the most encouraging things that I've ever heard as a pastor and a dad. And it was after dinner, and I had prepared this meal. I put the cast iron in the oven at 550 degrees. Pulled it out after about 20 minutes, put it on the stovetop, and then threw a couple sirloins in there and crusted the outside and got the steak perfectly rare in the middle with that beautiful crust on the outside. And so we had this nice dinner together. And then afterwards, we just got in this really rich discussion. And it was one of those kind of discussions where you're talking about the Bible, and my kids were peppering me with these very challenging questions about the Bible that make you feel inadequate to be a parent or a pastor for that matter. And in the course of the conversation, though, Audrey said, "Dad," she says, you make me want to actually read the Bible. And then she said, and then I read it and I'm like, what is this saying anyway? You know, but you know, I think that that sort of captures something that's behind this podcast, which I want to inspire my kids. I want to inspire my neighbors and my friends. I want to inspire the next generation. I want to inspire our church family to be interested in the Bible, interested enough to pick it up and to read it and engage with it. And in engaging with it, perhaps have God transform our lives by it. And I think the other thing that gets at is that the second part of that where she said, you know, I pick it up and I'm like, what does this mean, you know? And I want to also provide some guidance through these podcasts in your own engagement and reading with the Bible. So in the ideal world, this podcast will go along with your own regular Bible reading. So I put together a Through the Bible in a Year reading schedule. And so my hope is that when you come to these podcasts, you don't come cold. So I remember when I was in math class, if I showed up at math class and I had done the homework, and you know what this was, you know, you did the homework, you worked through the problems, and then the teacher started talking to you about it, all of a sudden, like light bulbs would go on. But if you went into the classroom cold and you hadn't done some work yourself, like you just didn't get it. And so I think that can happen, I think, with Bible teaching. If we don't engage with the text ourselves a bit and then come in, you know, you're not going to be as helped by it. So to make the most out of our time together in this podcast, I would encourage you to spend time in the Bible yourself. Do the Through the Bible program that we put together. Again, each week I'll talk about something in the reading that we had that week. And so one of the other reasons that's kind of like behind this, driving this whole podcast, is I feel like there's been something of an injustice done when it comes to the Bible. I think that in the modern world, the Bible is oftentimes dismissed as primitive or regressive or backwards, or it's outdated or outmoded. And I just think the injustice there is it's a bit arrogant for modern 21st century American readers to look back with scorn on ancient peoples who, in many respects, had some things figured out, had some wisdom for life that maybe we don't have or that we could use. And I think we, in our own cultural moment right now, we are a culture that is unmoored, that we don't have a lot of solid foundational stuff to anchor our lives into. And the scriptures, this ancient collection of sacred writings, is something we can anchor our lives in and find stability. And so we're going to begin our discussions with the book of Genesis. It's where the Bible begins. And so I want to do a little intro in the book of Genesis in these next few minutes. And so let's talk about Genesis. The book of Genesis is divided into two main sections, chapters 1 through 11, and then chapters 12 through 50. And the first half is about creation. It's about all nations and all people, and the scope is as wide as the universe itself. The second half the focus narrows incredibly. And you go from all peoples and all nations to one couple, Abraham and Sarah, and one nation, Israel, and a promise that God makes to that people. And so whereas the first half, it's about creation, the second half is about covenant. The first half is about God calling into being all things. The second half is about God calling into being his covenant people. And it's worth asking, why the narrowing of focus? I mean, if the Bible began so well, you know, like thinking about everyone, all nations, all people, all creation, why do we move from all of that all the way down to one couple, Abraham and Sarah, you know, and then Isaac and Rebecca, and then Jacob and Rachel and Leah and Joseph, and it kind of focuses on just this one little family. And you think, what happened to all people? And you know, one reason for the move from the universal to the particular, from the many to the one, I think, is that it's to reveal to us something about God, namely that God is interested in individual people. He's interested in having a personal relationship with us. You know, in the Brothers Karamazov, there's this character, this doctor, who always goes around expressing his love for humanity. He loves humanity, but he hates people. He can't stand people. He can't stand the way they breathe. He can't stand their annoying comments they make. He can't stand their smell. He just hates people. You know, some of you could relate to that. But you know, God's not like that. God loves humanity, but God also loves people. He loves individuals. And one thing that the second half of Genesis shows us is God's love for particular, specific, very messed up, complicated, difficult people, because you see that in their lives. But God enters into relationship and he walks with us even in our difficulties. The second reason from the move from the universal to the particular is the point of God choosing one man and one nation ultimately is for the sake of all peoples and all nations. God goes particular for the sake of the universal. He makes a promise to the one man, Abraham, so that through the family of Abraham, Israel, God might bring a seed, a descendant, namely Jesus, through whom all of the families of the earth will be blessed. And that message would go out to all the peoples of the earth. God gives his revelation, his word to this one family, this one nation, so that ultimately the good news and the scriptures and all of that might go out to all nations and all people, and that even on the other side of the world from where Israel is in the 21st century, there might be, you know, a 47-year-old dude who's sitting at a desk doing a podcast talking about the Bible who has no Jewish heritage, but whose my life has been incredibly blessed and transformed by this collection of writings. And so that's the layout of the book of Genesis. First half is about creation, the cosmos. The second half is about God's specific covenant people and how God chooses that people in order to bring blessing back to the creation and cosmos. Now, we're going to be moving a little bit more in the next couple weeks into the texture of the first 11 chapters. And so I want to give just a few framing statements about these 11 chapters because they're unusual. There we get the story of this garden with these magical trees and a talking snake. And then we have the story of envy and violence and murder with Cain and Abel. And then we have the story of the flood and then the Tower of the Babel. And in order to read these texts well, we need to understand what kind of stuff we're reading, what we're engaged with. You know, if I, for example, were to walk into a museum and I would see a Pablo Picasso and I would say, you know, Pablo Picasso, you know, I love him and I think he's the most brilliant artist ever. And I were to get into a fight with you because you said, you know, I don't like Pablo Picasso because he doesn't know how to draw a human face. You know, they're always distorted, eyes are in the wrong places, and the nose oftentimes is out of whack with the, you know, you've seen Picasso, right? And then I were to come back with you and say, you know, actually, you might judge Picasso, but actually people back in his day looked like that. And when he starts painting those paintings, he's painting what people were really like back then. And then somebody comes back and says, no, they weren't. They weren't like that. And Pablo Picasso, he's just so lame. And how could he, you know? But of course, both people have got it wrong, right? Pablo Picasso is not trying to do realistic art. He was into surrealism. And the point of that art was to distort things and to give radically different kind of like visions of things in order to communicate truth, to communicate something. But you got to know what kind of art you're dealing with if you're going to read it well. And so too with us, when we go to the Bible, we got to know what kind of stories, we got to know what kind of texts we're dealing with if we're going to read it well. And so what are these texts? Are we dealing with science? Are we dealing with a historical text? Three things I think we want to know about these texts. Number one, Genesis 1 through 11, number one is polemical. It's polemical. That simply means it's there to challenge and argue back against an alternate view of reality. And it's clear that there are themes and ideas that surface in these 11 chapters that were common in the ancient world in which they arose in. And so there are other flood narratives from the ancient world. Some of the symbolism actually in the Garden of Eden finds resonance in other kind of stories in the ancient world. But what the author of Genesis is doing is he's taking some ideas, he's reshaping them, he's being creative and bringing new ideas in order to challenge and confront the dominant worldview, namely a polytheism that believed that the gods were crazy, always at war with each other, kind of doing violence to each other. And so when you're reading these texts, you got to understand that they come into a context and they're there to shape and form Israel to be a monotheistic community who has loyalty to the true and living God in the midst of a polytheistic world where the gods are often stirring people to do violence against one another, they're fighting with each other, and the world and reality is viewed as chaotic. So number one, it's polemical. But number two, the second thing you got to recognize about these texts is that they are theological. So the primal actor in these narratives, the star figure in these opening stories, it's God. God is the main character. That's not just true, by the way, about Genesis 1 through 11. That's true from Genesis to Revelation. The prime actor in the Bible is God. The Bible is about God. It's there to render a vision of God that is beautiful and compelling. And in this way, the Bible gives us special divine revelation. This is why the Christian church has always confessed that these texts are sacred, divinely inspired, because here we believe that there was a lightning bolt from heaven, as it were, that broke in to give us revelation and knowledge and understanding about God. Now, of course, God's fullest disclosure of himself doesn't come here in the beginning. It ultimately comes in Jesus. And God's revelation about himself is progressive. So it begins a little bit more rudimentary, and then it gets more and more filled in till ultimately you get the pinnacle, you get the Mount Everest of divine revelation, which is Jesus. Jesus is the fullest disclosure of God's self. He is the most of God you will ever hope to see. And so in Jesus, we get the fullest picture of who God is. And back in these other texts, we still get revelation, but it's more like, you know, when my kids were little, it was my goal as a parent to ensure that they were lovers of J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings, right? I mean, and so I started with The Hobbit, and then I went to The Lord of the Rings, of course. But what I didn't do is I didn't hand my two-year-old a copy of The Lord of the Rings. And why didn't I do that? Well, you don't start with you know, 1,000 pages of reading. You start with the alphabet, and then you put the alphabet together. You help them learn sentences. You teach them how to sound that out and then read and put sentences with paragraphs and ultimately stories. And we have to think about divine revelation like this. God's revelation of himself fills out over time, but it begins more rudimentary and it gets more complex as we go on. So number two, this text is theological. It gives us revelation about God's self. And so as we're studying this and as we're reading this, it's always good to ask, what is this text revealing about God? Who is the God rendered through this story? Thirdly, it's not only polemical or theological. These stories are archetypal. What I mean is that these stories are about us. Or let me just put it like this. Genesis 1 through 11 is not exactly history. If I were going to give you a history of the Western world, I wouldn't simply tell you a story about the day in the life of one couple and then follow that up with two of their children who had a terrible fight and then one killed the other, and then told you about one catastrophe that affected the world, and then told you about some crisis among, you know, the United Nations. Like, that's not Western history. That's not this full disclosure. That would be a very, very selective group of information I would share with you, and I'd have to have a reason for it. The biblical author in Genesis is very selective in the information he's sharing. And he's got a reason for it, and it's because these specific stories are not simply a history of what happened then to them. These stories are given to us because they're about us. This is our story. You get this in Romans chapter 5 when he's reflecting back, the Apostle Paul, on Adam, and he essentially reveals to us that it's in Adam that we all fell into sin. Adam's story is our story. This is what we mean by archetypal. You know, there's this great scene in John Steinbeck's, probably his best novel, East of Eden, where the protagonist, Adam, is in a conversation with his neighbor Samuel and his servant Lee about the story of Cain and Abel. Actually, the book East of Eden is a whole exposition. It's a riff on the story of Cain and Abel. But there's this scene where they're talking about the story of Cain and Abel, and Samuel says this. He says, "Most people don't read the details, but it's the details that astonish me." And then he says a little bit later, he says, "Isn't it strange that three grown men here in a century, so many thousand years away, discuss this crime as though it happened in King City yesterday?" And then Lee responds, "People are only interested in themselves. If a story is not about the hearer, he will not listen. And here I make a rule," and listen to what he says, "a great and lasting story is about everyone, or it will not last." Samuel says, "Well, apply that to Cain and Abel." And Lee says, "I think I can. I think this is the best known story in the world because it is everybody's story. I think it is the symbol story of the human soul." And that is an archetypal story. It's a story that is everyone's story. It's a story where we find ourselves, we are like Adam and Eve. We feel naked and ashamed. We hide to cover up what we've done wrong. We are like Cain, feeling jealous about our brother or our sister or our neighbor. And sometimes you haven't killed them, but you've wanted to. You might have wanted to kill your brother at some time. You know, and we find ourselves like all of the families of the earth, accountable to God and under his judgment because of the violence in our world, like those under the judgment of the flood. We find ourselves like the Tower of Babel, trying to our best to make a name for ourselves and find ourselves actually tearing ourselves apart as the result of that very pursuit to our own personal greatness. And so these stories are archetypal. In these stories, you find something about yourself. This is uniquely true of Genesis 1 through 11. And so as you look at it, look for it in that sense. You know, the great Old Testament scholar, Robert Alter, he's a Hebrew scholar. He said this, "Compelling in its archetypal character, it sets the terms," speaking of Genesis, "compelling in its archetypal character, it sets the terms not scientifically, but symbolically for much of the way we have thought about human nature and culture ever since." And so as we look into these stories, we're going to find stories about ourselves, we're going to find revelation here about God, and we're also going to encounter an ancient people who were speaking polemically against, you know, alternate ways of viewing reality in their day that actually have tremendous traction for how people think in our day. And it can redirect us and shape and mold and form us. And so we will be looking forward to jumping back into this text as we start working. In our next episode, we're going to start working through the text line by line, verse by verse. and look forward to joining with you again when we come back together.
Praise Father, Son.